So in the beginning of this week's parsha, we're told in the second source, "Vayomer Hashem el Avram, lech lecha mi'artzecha miladetecha mi'beit avicha, el ha'aretz asher ar'eka." We're told that Avraham is approached by God, and one thing which is interesting here is that it gives us no background, no information, nothing what happened beforehand, you know, no rhyme or reason. It doesn't even give us this introduction saying, oh, by the way, Avram was a tzaddik in his generation, any generation, not a word. Just starts out right away, Avram, pick up and move. That's the beginning as far as we know. Look, the truth is, if you look at the end of last week's parsha, there are various hints, but that's not what we're going to talk about. This is understood in the first source, where it's very famous that Abraham was tested on 10 different times, 10 different occasions, that the leaving of, well, the coming to the land of Israel is understood as being one of the tests. It says in source number one, in Avot Rabbi Natan, "Eser nisyonot nitnasa Avraham Avinu lepnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ubekulam nimtza shalem." There were 10 times that Avraham was tested, and in every instance he was found to be whole or perfect. Incidentally, even though it's common knowledge that Avraham was tested 10 times, it's not necessarily agreed what those 10 tests were. If you look at the different sources, you will come different opinions what the tests were. Over here in Avot Rabbi Natan, which is a rabbinic expansion of Pirkei Avot, because the 10 tests themselves are written in Pirkei Avot, that there are 10 tests. Here it says, "Ve'elu hein," and these are the tests. "Shnaim bilech lecha." Included in that pasuk that we just now read, there were 2 tests. Okay, your homework is to go back and home to figure out what those 2 tests were exactly. And I'll read the rest of the source. It says in Lech Lecha there were 2. "V'shtei banav shtayim, v'shtei nashav, echad im hamalachim, v'chad bein avatarim, v'chad ba'or kasdim, v'chad b'brit milah." What's really interesting about that list? Counted? Well, where's the Akedah? Unless the Akedah means one with the sons, the Akedah is generally understood to be the 10th test, although some people say it has to do with the burial of Sarah. Nonetheless, in our pasuk, lech lecha, to pick up and go, this is considered to be a test. And I have a simple question. Why is that a test? I mean, Avram was not necessarily the most popular individual back in his hometown. They try to kill him. Right? Put him in a furnace. Ruins his father's business. Why was Avram's leaving from this place that he was not all that popular considered to be a test? Okay? Oh, you mean coming to Israel is the test?
He didn't know where he was going.
Okay. So you could then say that if you read carefully over here, it does not say the destination. I mean, any of you remember going on trips with the kids? Doesn't make a difference where you're going. Are we there yet? Are we there? Here, you don't know where you're going. It's, and by the way, the trip there is always longer than the trip back. Right? Why? Because when you're not exactly sure where you're going, so then it's that much more, I guess, angst involved in it. So perhaps that's the test. Although if that is the test, it doesn't sound, you know, you say, okay, Avram does not exactly know where he's going to go versus the Akedah. Those, and perhaps one can't compare anything with the Akedah, but nonetheless, to speak of a test as such, it does sound, it sounds like we're missing something. Let's just put it like that. The second pasuk says in source 2, "Ve'escha l'goy gadol, I will make you into a great nation. Avarechecha v'agadla shemecha v'heyeh bracha. You will become a great nation. I will bless you, bless your name, and you will be for a blessing. The third pasuk says, Va'avarcha mivarechecha u'mikalecha aor v'nivruchu v'cha kol mishpachot adama. You bless will be blessed, you curse will be cursed, and through you all the nations of the world will be blessed.
I just noticed lately that that's what the fundamental Christians use. That first, I've seen it a lot lately. It was in today's paper, but I also saw it before today. I saw it today's
paper. You should stop reading the paper.
But I saw this before that this is what they use to, as a source for them to pray for us and to love Israel and to be Zionists. And it's a positive thing.
Correct.
They use this particular.
Correct, but before we get to fundamentalist Christians, who, to be truthful, I was not going to bring them up today.
Okay.
between Pasuk Bet and Pasuk Gimel, there is a tension, and it's this tension that we're going to focus on all day today. The tension is between, on the one hand, becoming a great nation, which really is a vision which is very particular, versus the third verse, and by you will all nations of the world be blessed, which is a universal. So what Charlotte picked up on was the universal message, which was in the third verse. But even though it's very easy, perhaps, for people today to look and say, oh, these things are combined together. The Jews are holy people, and therefore a blessing will come through them. Over here, these two verses actually pose a challenge, and actually, I think for Avram himself, perhaps created some kind of attention. What is Avram's focus really to be? Is Avram's focus to be a universal figure who's going to affect or impact all of mankind? Or is Avraham's message and mission one to work on the Jews, or perhaps the Jews exclusively, or his own particular descendants? This question that I think comes up between the first and the second verse may actually be part of this test that we speak of. And what I'm really asking then is, when Avraham leaves his hometown, what is his interest? Is his interest to become his own nation, or is Avraham's interest to change the people of his town? What does Avraham really want to do? Yes, he has had a hard time back in his neighborhood. He is not the most respected person. On a certain level, leaving should have been very easy. But on the other hand, leaving also, in a certain sense, means giving up. It means giving up because he said, okay, we just are not going to be able to change this, and therefore now it's time to go someplace else. God tells him, pick up and go someplace else. By the way, there is also an unanswerable question, and this could be a whole other discussion. When did God speak to Avraham? Because anyone who did look at the end of last week's parsha knows that Terach himself ended up leaving as well. Not only did Terach end up leaving, Terach was on his way to Eretz Canaan. So Terach is on his way, and he stops, and he never makes it. Avraham leaves with Terach, but when did God speak? Did God speak to Avraham when he was still in his hometown, and then they go together? Or does Terach take Avraham from the hometown, and now they're in Haran, and at this point God speaks to him and tells him to come? What age was Avraham when God spoke to him? We know what age he is when he gets over here. When he leaves Haran, we know what age he is. We don't know that much about this particular revelation, vision, or prophecy that takes place. What we are told, and this is a little bit more optimistic, and this is in the third source, V'yikach Avraham et Sarai ishto, v'et Lot ben Achiv. And by the way, I skipped Pasuk Dalet, which throws everything out of whack, so you can look at that later and see why that is. V'yomer Hashem sorry, Vayikach Avram et Sarai Ishto, but lo ben Achiv, but kol rechusham asher rachashu, ve'et ha'nefesh asher asu b'charan. V'yitzu l'lechet artzaknan, v'yavo artzaknan. They left, they went, they traveled, which is a little bit too many words. V'yavo Avram ba'aretz ad makom shchem, ad ilon moreh, v'aknani az ba'aretz. Avram goes, and the place that he gets to specifically is Shechem, which itself should be of supreme interest. But when he leaves with Lot, his nephew, and he leaves with his wife, and he also leaves with an entourage. Although it's interesting that the entourage are not people that followed him from his hometown. The entourage are people that Avram picked up along the way. Where did he pick them up? A nefesh yishasu b'charan. This is not Aram Naharayim. This is not where Avraham is from. This was along the way Avraham stops in his own hometown. He is not recognized. He is not necessarily respected. Any of you ever heard of the statement, Ein Navi B'iro? Right? You know who made up that statement? Muhammad. In order to explain why in his own hometown nobody respected him. But when he went to other places, they got great respect. This happens to many rabbis I know. Yeah? It's halfway. It's interesting to look at an outline.
Is it the same? Because he doesn't say from your city, he says from your country.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't believe it's the same. I don't believe it's the same country.
Okay, so we can. Because right. It sounds to me like he's talking to him in Haran.
Correct. So as I said, this is an interesting question. Yeah. When God speaks to him, and we don't know the answer. How old is Avram when he arrives in Israel? No, Terach lives, that's the last Rashi in last week's Parsha. How old is Avram when he arrives? Yeah? 75, that's the pasuk we skipped, right? Vayelech Avram kasher diber lav Hashem, vayelech yitov lot, va'avram ben chamesh shanim v'shivim shana v'tzeito mi'charan. But from Haran he brings people. And the bringing of people, Rashi says, let's look at the Rashi in source 4. What does it mean, a nefesh yishasu b'charan? Rashi writes, shechnisam tachat kanfei ha'shchina, that he brought them in relationship with God. He brought them into the world of God. He brought God into their world. Avraham migayer et anashim. Avraham went and he reached out to the men. The Sarah migayer et anashim, and Sarah reached out to the women. Maleh leim akatuv ki ilo asa'um, and it says asu b'charan. It's as if they made them. It's as if they created them. Rashi, by the way, knows that that's not pshat. How do I know that Rashi knows that's not pshat? Rashi says right after upshuto shemikra, but what this really means is. Avadim v'shvachot shekanu lahem, that nefesh yishasu b'charan is that their entourage are not spiritually people that are following them, but rather it's their servants that are following them. It's their household. Now, you have to ask yourself a question. If Rashi knows very well that this is not pshat, why does Rashi say it? And Rashi will tell us various times in his commentary that his task is to tell us pshat. His task is to tell us what the verse really means. Over here, Rashi knowingly goes against his own mandate, tells us that it means all these people that Avram and Sarah inspired, respectively. And then he says, yeah, but what it really means is something else. Why did Rashi do this? It sounds as if Rashi is incredibly enamored by this interpretation that Avram and Sarah did impact people when they were in Haran. Rashi is also focusing on something else, which is a teaching from the Gemara. But before I mention the Gemara, I'll mention what it says in Targum Onkelos. It says, V'yat nafshata, all the souls, v'sha'abdu li'oraita, that they brought towards Torah. Now, first of all, to use the term Torah over here is very interesting, because what exactly does it mean that Avraham brought them towards Torah? Avraham converted the men, Sarah converted the women. What exactly did they convert them towards? But nonetheless, it uses the word Torah. The reason for this is that there is a Gemara, it's in Avodah Zarah on page 9, Daf Tet. The Gemara says that the world experienced 2,000 years of Tohu Vavohu. You thought Bereshit Ba'alu came, Tohu Vavohu ended by the first day. It says, no, Tohu Vavohu went on for 2,000 years. Tohu Vavohu were the Dark Ages. Tohu Vavohu was man was spiritually lost. In the year 2000, according to the Gemara, in the year 2000 is when Torah began to be taught in the world. What happened in the year 2000? Hanefesh Hishasu B'charam. And that's the verse the Gemara quotes. It says, this is the beginning of Torah. Incidentally, in case you're confused, Avraham was born, according to Torah sources, in the year 1948. 1948 is when Avraham was born from... Right, this is something that you should remember after this. Avraham was born in the year 1948 from creation. And then the question is, at which age did Avraham recognize his creator? So there are sources that say at the age of 3, which is quite surprising, how a 3-year-old could recognize. There's sources that say 48. So the way to reconcile this is to say at 3 years old, Avram already understood that idolatry was silly. But it took him until the age of 48, really, to have a fuller understanding. By the way, at the age of 48, that is when dispersion took place. That is, again, if you just follow biblical chronology, at the age of 48, Avram stood by the building of the tower. That happened when he was 48. When he was 58 is when Noach died. Which is why it says in certain sources that Avram is 58, which is Nunchet, which is Noach. Avram becomes Noach. When Noach dies, he becomes the new tzaddik of that generation. But if Avram's born in 1948, then at the age of 52, it would have been the year 2000. And that's what the Gemara is insisting, that from the age of 3 to the age of 48, Avraham goes through all kinds of questions, rejecting the world around him, finally coming to this understanding that there is one God. It takes him from the age of 42 to 58. And by the way, just if you want to understand, 48 to 52, if you want to understand this chronology, by 48 is when, by the building of the tower, is when they try to put him in the furnace. Correct? That's when he's put in the furnace, and it's the furnace which was used to build the tower. At that point, by the dispersion, one of the people who's dispersed, who has to go someplace else, is Avraham. Avraham leaves at that point. Now, between the age of 48 and 52 is when Avraham, I guess, works on his world vision a little bit more. And at the age of 52, in the year 2000, that's what the Gemara is insisting. Now he begins to teach Torah. That begins 2,000 years of Torah, which is over. The 2,000 years of Torah goes from when Avraham starts to teach till the end of Nevuah. That's the 2,000 years. If you want to look in the Torah Tamima on the Pasuk, he goes through the calculation. And the Gemara says 2,000 of Tohu Vavohu, 2,000 of Torah, and from the time of the dispersion onward, we've had 2,000 years of Mashiach. Now, and just in case you're looking around and the 2,000 years of Mashiach is not going that well, what the Gemara means by this is that for 2,000 years we've been hoping for Mashiach. We've been with the anticipation, the praying for Mashiach, and therefore this is one of the sources that by the year 6,000 is when everything should come to fulfillment. Now, Avraham, therefore, is teaching these people and he's involving them in Torah. This is the beginning of Torah. But let's think a second. What exactly is the form of Torah that Avraham's teaching at this point? Now, there are sources that will then tell us that the whole trip over here to Eretz Canaan, for example, if you look... Yes?
You just said a lot of important things very quickly. He was sent out, you said he was part of the dispersion. He and his father, you said he was still with his father. His father gave up the business then.
According to some, his father was not that popular after having a son like Avraham, who's going around saying heretical things.
But everyone was leaving then.
But, correct.
They were there, they were just... other people were...
If you look at the backdrop in terms of what we understand of biblical chronology, then it becomes interesting that Avraham's leaving may be at the same time.
He was just like he left in 1492,
right?
In the position, so everybody was leaving at that time.
Correct.
So it was a mess.
Everything's a mess.
So the others, no, I'm not even a mess. No, so there were other people maybe who left. So the people who left, it's hard to know. People, I mean, we don't know what was going on then.
Correct.
A whole group may have left with what we
know. Correct. Correct. So now we have a little bit more perspective. If you look at the Kaskunian source number 5, he connects it to everything I just now told you, but he says it very succinctly. He says, "V'nefesh asher asu amri b'shmaita d'tana d'Eliyahu." It's taught in the name of Tana d'Eliyahu in the Gemara, Daf Tet. Kan matchil matan Torah. This is the beginning of Torah. By the way, it's very funny to call this matan Torah. What kind of Torah is this? What were they doing? And we will address that point. The hatargum ra'aya. And what it says in the targum, that's a proof to this position. That's what the Chizkuni says. The Sforno understands, v'yitzu lelechet artza Kana'an, and they started to go to the land of Kana'an. Why? Shaitam mefursemet etzlam ba'aretz mukhenet lehitbonenut ulevodat hakel yitbarach. It had a reputation of being a holy land. Where would this come from, this reputation? Where would this reputation come from?
So, well,
where would the reputation come from? So perhaps this goes with the biblical tradition that the flood never hit the land of Israel. And perhaps they understood that it was something different about this land. Although it's interesting. Terach is on his way to Eretz Kanaan. Abraham, according to Rashi's first interpretation, succeeds in bringing this whole entourage of followers with him to Eretz Kanaan. Why go? So the Sforno tells us it's a holy land. They're on a mission. They want to come up and they want to have a religious experience. That's why they come. I don't know why any of you find this so surprising. This is what the Sforno says. What people do today is exactly what was going on then. Why go to Shechem? So Rashi tells us in Source 7 that he went to Shechem because of what's going to happen in the future. Shechem's not going to, bad things will happen in Shechem, and they need a little support. They need a little prayer. They need a little help. And therefore, Rashi says, "Litpalelo b'nei Yaakov kishevo l'lachem b'shechem." He's going to have to pray for them who are going to fight. The Ramban in Source 8 goes much more into this in depth. And here's where, this is one of the famous places, the Ramban, where he talks about the idea of Maaseh Avot Siman L'banim, and Abraham's coming to Shechem is what gives the ability later on for B'nai Yaakov to be able to come to Shechem. But there's one line in the Ramban that we'll look at. You know what, I'll just quote it outside. Coming to Shechem, where B'nai Yaakov fight and capture Shechem, this is the first time we find the Jewish people as a Jewish people capturing the land of Israel. Which means, it's very interesting. Abraham's first footsteps take him to Shechem. This is where he's going to build the first Mizbeach. This is where he's going to have the first spiritual experience. Here will be the first conquest of the land of Israel, which means nationhood, Am Yisrael, capturing Eretz Yisrael, will take place here. What the Ramban is going to tell us then is the ability to capture, the ability of the nation to begin, will take place because this is where Avram gets to. Now, if we go back to our issue before, in terms of the tension between the universal mission of Avraham to impact the entire world versus this particular mission of Avraham, perhaps no place better than Shechem does this come to. That Shechem represents this tension. Because when you look at the people of Shechem, what they're saying is, let us intermarry and they don't act very nicely, we know that. But let us intermarry and become one, let us become absorbed from one another, which means there will be no independent Am Yisrael. We'll be part of a larger community. And what the brothers feel is that no, we must remain separate and we don't accept this. And over here in this particular place is where Am Yisrael for the first time emerges as an Am, and for the first time will capture a part of Eretz Yisrael. So over here, this tension of Avraham by Shechem will later on manifest itself by this tension that takes place by the children of Yaakov by Shechem as well. So, yeah. You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. That is what goes through the test. Absolutely. Including the rejection of Yishmael, because he's not going to be part of this particular Am. And then the whole test becomes of getting rid of Yitzhak and what's going to be with the Am. I mean, and this keeps going, this tension keeps vacillating, keeps going back and forth, exactly what is the mission, but we'll see more.
More
I understand. But no, that's correct. That is correct. I know you're thinking now, are we going to get through all the sources? The answer is unlikely. But when we go back and think about this question about Avraham is going to teach Torah to these people, there is at least one Gemara that takes it very seriously, or sounds like it takes it very seriously, and that's source number 9. Amarav. Gemara says, Kiyem Avram Avinu et kol haTorah kula. Avram kept the entire Torah. And you've heard things like this, now you see it inside. Avram's kept the whole Torah. Shenemar, what? You've heard of this. Ekav asher shama Avraham bikoli, omrle Rav Shimi, Barfi, Lerav, Ve'ema, Sheva Mitzvot, Hahav Yinami Mila, Ve'ema, Sheva Mitzvot, Mila. I mean, no, maybe he just kept 7 Mitzvot. Maybe he just kept 7 Mitzvot and Brit Mila that he was given later. Omrle in Cain, Mitzvot, Hai, V'Torah, Tai, Lama. Why does the verse say, Ekav asher shama Avraham bikoli, and it goes on to say, Mitzvot, Hai, V'Torah, Tai? How could it mean that Avram kept Mitzvot, Hai, V'Torah, Tai? So the Gemara says, Amar Rabba, Yitema Rav Ashi. Rav said, and perhaps the tradition comes from Rav Ashi, Kiim Avram Avinu Afilu Eruve Tavshilin. Avram kept everything, he even kept Eruv Tavshilin. Shenemar V'Torah Tai, Echa Divrei Torah V'Echa Divrei Sofrim. Another version of the Gemara says, Divrei Drabanan. Divrei Sofrim and Divrei Rabbanan, or it could be Torah Shabbatav, Torah Shabbatav. But either way, we have a Gemara over here implying Avram kept everything. He goes so far as that he even kept Erev Tavshilin. Avram even remembered on a 3-day Yantuf, right? He remembered beforehand that he has to go put up an Erev. He has to go put up an Erev Tavshilin. So you read this Gemara, you take it at face value, and then you ask yourself a question: does this mean that Avram Avinu? You know, there is another rabbinic source that Avram Avinu eating matzah. Okay, so Avram had a seder. Did Avram build a sukkah? Well, I guess he had some kind of a tent. Did Avram dance around by himself on Simchas Torah? Did Avram get drunk on Purim? Did Avram tell Purim Torah? I mean, if you begin to think about all of this, most of us, again, if you want to take this at face value, you certainly have my permission. But I think most of us read this and say, okay, what does this mean? And it's interesting today that if you would go over, and my suspicion is, to the extent that you believe this, can actually determine where you stand within the religious community. That if you were ultra-Orthodox, you would be more likely to take this literally. If you were a little bit more modern, then you would say, well, maybe it means something else. If not, you say it doesn't mean anything. And people will have difficulty with a line like this. I do want to show you, again, time-depending, at least half a dozen Hasidic sources and how they deal with this Gemara. But the reason we will look at them, because it's going to take us right back to what our problem actually is. There is another Midrash, and we'll need this to get to one of the later sources, that it says that Yaakov Avinu kept Shabbat. In source 10, V'yokhan shem v'yosi barchalif to'amar avrim she'en katuv boshmerat Shabbat, which is very interesting. By Avram, this midrash thing, it never says anything that Avram kept Shabbat. There you go. He kept all of Torah, but over here the midrash is, but it never says he kept Shabbat. So how do you reconcile this? And by the way, you cannot believe how many authors, and I spared you these. Like I see, I cut out sources. I know you don't believe me. I said, okay, we're not going to get into this. There were those who said, hold it, if Avram kept the whole Torah, how could he keep Shabbat because he wasn't Jewish? Which itself is a whole other discussion. If he's Jewish, if he's not Jewish, he's not allowed to keep Shabbat. If he kept the, by the way, they also say if he kept the whole Torah, and we'll see some of this. If he kept the whole Torah, then why did God have to tell him to do Brit Milah? He would have done Brit Milah beforehand, right? By the way, there are halachic books that spend a lot of paper dealing with these questions. Okay, we will not go any further into it. But it says here, it doesn't say Shmirat Shabbat that Avram kept Shabbat. So why did he deserve the land of Israel? Because God said, "Kum hitalech baaretz." Pure Zionism, secular Zionism, not religious Zionism. Avram is a secular Zionist, according to this midrash. He comes to the land, he walks around the land, and that's the right that he has to the land. Kum hitalech baaretz ta'arka ulerachva. Aval Yaakov shekotuv bo shmirat Shabbat. Excuse me. Where exactly did it say that Yaakov kept Shabbat? Shene'emar vayichan et pnei ha'ir. By the way, the ear we're talking about is Shem. back to Shechem. But Yechan et Pnei Ir, he put boundaries up around the city. What does this mean? Nechnas in Dimdume Chama, he came there as the sun was about to set on Erev Shabbat, the Kavat Chumim. And he set up the Tchum. What is the Tchum? The Tchum is a milestone, literally. What's the Tchum? You are not allowed to go past this place on Shabbat. On Shabbat, you're not allowed to walk 2,000 amot out of the city. So over here, the Midrash is standing. Yaakov, it says, he gets to the city, Vayichan et Ha'ir. What does it mean, Vayichan et Ha'ir? Yaakov sets up boundaries. Yaakov puts up tchumim. Yaakov puts up boundaries. So therefore, we see that Yaakov kept Shabbat. Yivod yom, yarashat ha'olam, shalov, and midash, and emav, and so on and so forth. Yaakov's schut in Eretz Yisrael is because he kept Shabbat. Avraham's schut is even though he didn't keep Shabbat. And we're sitting here saying, hold it a second. Avraham kept all of the Torah. What does this mean? The Or HaChaim in Source 11 tells us, has a little bit of a question. How could it be that we say that the Avot kept all the mitzvot when you see, for example, certain things which may be disturbing, like Yaakov marries two sisters? I don't know about you, but according to my understanding of Jewish law, this is not necessarily normative Jewish practice. This is not allowed. This is considered to be a heinous crime. So how can Yaakov do such a thing? So the Or HaChaim says something wonderful in terms of the Avot keeping the Torah. Of a makom shall you roim toelat davar hatzlacha lehem. When they saw that it worked out for them, they did it. He realized that it would be better to marry them, so therefore he did it. Yaakov picked and chose. Okay? Yaakov was modern Orthodox. Okay, that's quite nice. Yaakov decided which ones he would keep, and decided which ones he wouldn't keep, and if it was convenient, he kept it. Okay. But this may be very inspirational for a lot of people, that Yaakov didn't like this one, so therefore he didn't keep that one. The ones he did like, he did keep, and so on. This is what the Or HaChaim says. This is the Or HaChaim's read. But by the way, the other people give different interpretations. Again, you have your Zionist interpretation for this, that Yaakov marries two sisters. Why? Because he's in Chutz La'aretz. In Chutz La'aretz, you don't have to keep the Torah. Right? The Ramban likes that interpretation much better. And therefore, what happens when they come back to the land? Rachel dies. Okay? Nonetheless, why are we working so hard? Again, why are we working so hard to try to figure this out? Because it really does seem strange to us. In the Sefer Avodat Yisrael, Source 12, Ki bevaday hisig et ha-mitzvot bidda'ato, rak sheyorotze lekayem et tzuvah la'achar tzivui, kidei sheyav mitzuveh va'oseh. Over here he's dealing with the problem. How did, if Avram kept the whole Torah, then why didn't he do Brit Milah? Of course he knew about Brit Milah, and he kept it in his mind. What does that mean, he kept it in his mind? He kept it in his mind, but he wanted to wait for God to tell him to do it, because it's better to be mitzuveh va'oseh. One second, look at Source 13, Igra Dekala, another very well-known Hasidic source. Ki be'emet kiyem Avram Avinu kol ha-Torah kula, ma shehitbonen misichlo. V'hitbonen gam b'mitzvot milah. Again, it's in his mind, is how he keeps the Torah, but not in the real world. If this is not clear, look at the Sefer Noam Elimelech. Right? You know who Noam Elimelech is? He's the one who had the song Adarabba, and he met from, I hope I'm pronouncing it properly, from Lizansk. 14. The Itabit Marakim Avmarbinu Alava Shalom Afilu Eruv Tafshilin. He even kept Eruv Tafshilin. Bahainu Shahoya Mikadesh Umitaher et Kol Ramach Everav Vishasagidav Kol Ever Bimitzvah Shayachla to Kol Mitzvah Mitzvah Yeshla Olam Fne Atzma. He says that Avram understood every single mitzvah, which has its own world, which affects the individual in a particular way, and he understood all of the mitzvot taseh, mitzvot lo taseh. Although it's interesting, he doesn't over here say that he actually did it. He said he understood it, which really leads us back to the previous two sources in terms of the mind. In the Sefer Arvi Nachal, he asks, how can any person ever keep all the mitzvot? By the way, you realize that. No one person can ever keep all Tayyar mitzvot. Aside from the fact some from men and some from women, aside from the fact that some are Kohanim and some are for Leviim, some for the time of the Beit HaMikdash, some are to get married and some are to get divorced. I mean, to keep all Tayyar mitzvot is an incredible challenge. He goes back to this idea, Shuvad Devarzeh, the second paragraph, daki kol mitzvah kula b'kol ha'tayag v'mkein b'kol mitzvah yesh klal u'prat ki b'koch yesh b'kol ha'tayag b'fol hu pratiyuta levad u'miyad sh'nivra adam mitzvah v'shev mitzvah k'kiyum otan ha'avot v'yetzu tzadikei ha'derot ad matan tera v'kol ha'tayag kulim b'kol mitzvah mehem. It's very interesting. He says over here that all 613 commandments are really subsided within the 10, within the 7. You keep the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, which is what Avraham did, and it's as if you kept all Tariag Mitzvot. So hold it. That makes a very big difference, because now we've really reduced this from saying Avraham's idea of, but by the way, now go back to the Nefesh Hasheh Sa B'charan. The Nefesh Hasheh, he brought them into the world of Torah. What does that mean, he brought them into the world of Torah? If I would have said in the very beginning that the beginning of Torah is that now he started to teach people the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, I think all of us would have had a lot easier time with this. This is what it says in the Sefer Avri Nachal. In the Shem Yishmuel, which is a fairly recent Hasidic source, he writes, he talks about the mitzvah of tefillin, how it's uniquely connected to Yaakov, which is not our discussion, and he writes where it's underlined, V'vaday gam Avram kiyem inyan tefillin, aval haya b'levush acher. Avram kept the mitzvah of tefillin, but it was in a different garment. What does that mean, it was a different garment? What does that mean, was it a different garment? It means not, he kept the mitzvah of tefillin, but not by putting on tefillin. He got to the spiritual level of putting on tefillin, but he didn't put on tefillin. Any of you who ever felt perhaps a tefillin envy and felt that there is this that there is this incredible spiritual level that can only be achieved by virtue of putting on tefillin. It's very interesting here. He says, no. Is that the spiritual accomplishment of what tefillin can do for you, there are other ways of doing it, and that's what Avraham did. Avraham did not put on tefillin. If anybody feels today, well, I put on tefillin this morning, still see the signs. If I put on, that means I'm on a higher spiritual level than Avraham. He says, what are you talking about? Avraham was mikayem this mitzvah, but what does it mean to fulfill the mitzvah? Bilavush acher. Ki ba'asher hayu yichidim lo hutzrecha hitachdut ayidei hama'aseh. That when the world was such that there was Yichidim, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, they did not need the Ma'aseh Mitzvah. V'haya l'kol echad ma'aseh v'kli miyuchad. Each one had their own tools of connecting to God. Which is interesting, because over here, you begin to see where I'm going with this. In terms of keeping the mitzvot, Avraham's keeping the mitzvot, it's completely different than we would have thought. We can now, having gotten that far, we can skip source 18, which tells us that the mitzvot actually are all about one thing, connecting to God. And if you are able to connect to God without the mitzvot, then you don't have to do the mitzvot. By the way, do you realize why all this could be very dangerous? What? So just to make sure you don't draw that conclusion, I don't know if any of you were fortunate enough to read in the paper on Friday how there was a certain rabbi who claimed that he didn't have to keep any of the laws of tzniut because it's coming from a very deep place. So it comes from a very deep place, then all the laws don't apply at all. Yes?
Are they saying all these things possibly because they can't imagine that the avodah zarah?
What they're saying is a very simple statement. And I'm working too hard. They're saying a very simple statement. The Avot and the Imhot were very great spiritual people, but they did not keep mitzvot. Okay? So it's hard from a Jewish perspective to say that Avram was a spiritual giant, but he didn't wear a furry hat. No, it's very hard for certain people to... No, I'm serious. It's very hard for people to imagine what Avram Avinu's spiritual life would have been like when it didn't... What was that life? What was that life? That is part of the problem.
If you're the prototype, then you... sort of go by different rules.
Let's just read source 19. The Dego Machane Ephraim, who just told us, you know, on a spiritual level, it's all about understanding God. You know what? Let's read the top line of source on page 4. It's the of source 18. It says, "Lokach kiyem Avravinu kol Torah kula ad shelo nidna ki higia la'amitut elokut." All of Torah comes down to Anochi v'lo yeh. All of Torah comes down to I am one God, don't have other gods. Avram understood that. If Avram understood that, he had the whole Torah. Because all the other mitzvot are supposed to get us to that point. Halavai, when I put on my tefillin this morning, I was thinking the whole time, remembering that there's one God. Right? Halavai to get to that point. Avraham lived with unbelievable clarity that there is one God. But, the same Degel Machane Ephraim writes in verse 19, Ulehem lo hayat zerich haTorah lehikatev klal, they did not need a Torah which was written. Ach mash nechtav kol Torahu ledidan, their Torah is for us. She'en lonu mochin kahem, we don't have their intelligence. He doesn't just mean mind intelligence, he means spirituality as well. Ulekachu tzrach lehikatev kol Torah v'mitzvot she'al yadam hisigu b'chinat anochi, aval avot yadu hanekuda ha'amitit, they understood the objective of all of Torah. They did not have to do Torah. But once Matan Torah takes place, then it completely changes everything, and then he needs to do it. Yeah.
Isn't all this discussion about what's the difference between being a good person and being a God and being a good person? I mean, if he hasn't done Brit Milah, then he's not Jewish. So basically, a good, and this question keeps coming back today too, people say, don't people ever come up to you, not Jews? He says, so what's the difference?
Jews come over to me. Jews come over to me. But now realize this is exactly goes back to our tension with Abraham,
right.
between the universal versus the particular. Well, let's see. Good, but let's see what happens next. Then.
Yeah.
We're getting back there. We'll come back to you in a minute. Yeah.
He was there when they saw a whole humanity not understanding their place in this world. And humanity that was dispersed by God because they didn't understand what they were doing. Abraham intrinsically understood our place in the world. He intrinsically understood why we are here, not because of the question, but what our job is in this world. And he went out to teach. Now we ourselves can't do that without Torah.
I agree. I knew that. But but you're right. You're right. That's exactly what the Degel Machane Ephraim is saying, is that Abraham's world didn't need this, and therefore he connected to God at the most profound level. He did not need all of these mitzvot. People today say, oh, I don't need any of this mitzvot. They're going to run into problems. Correct. Okay, correct. And by the way, what's so interesting is that this is absolutely part of the dangerous aspect of Hasidic thought, where it can now lead to somebody say, even a great Hasidic Rebbe to say, well, who said I have to get up at the right time in the morning because I'm not ready to pray yet? And it's the feeling which is more important than the action, because now we realize the essence of Judaism really is the feeling. And this, even though it sounds perhaps, oh, say, no, but this is before Matan Torah, that in Hasidic circles, what we've just now read, that's not an accident, these were all Hasidic writers. It's that even after Matan Torah, it still has its impact. And this is part of what people like the Vilna Gaon thought was so dangerous about this, because they found this to be terribly antinomian, because this can lead to destructive duties. And as I said, once again, you read that article that was in the paper on Friday, and you realize the person quoting the Baal Shem Tov, quoting things like that, on a great spiritual level, I can do, and then I can just do whatever I want. But you wanted to get, now you're going to want to know which article I'm talking about. Okay. If you then go back to source 21, we are moving towards Brit Milah. That's really going to be the question. Because part of what bothered a lot of these sources is, if Abraham did all the Torah, if he really did it, then why didn't he do Brit Milah? So he accomplished it, he's on the spiritual level of it. Brit Milah, though, nonetheless, represents a problem for Abraham.
I have a question.
Yes.
When you say he did all the Torah, starting when?
Good question. Good question. I said that's part of what we can't answer.
Because in terms of when he did his Brit Milah, maybe before he started doing his Torah.
The Brit Milah is later on. The Brit Milah is at the age of 99.
Okay.
But that's later.
Definitely after he would have been doing
Torah. Right. Absolutely. This definitely is after, yes. Right. In source 21... we're told Tiferet Shlomo, Again, very well-known Hasidic writer. The Hikshir, okay, it says, Itabi Gemara, Kim Avram Avinu, Kol Torah Kula, Ad Shlonitna, V'Hikshir Rishonim, Lama Lokim Gam Kim Mitzvat Milat Chila. If that's the case, why didn't he do Brit Milah if he kept the... Which means, it sounds as if he's taking the question seriously. Avram really kept the Torah, so why didn't he do Brit Milah? Achine Yadu, Ki Avram Avinu Olav HaShalom, Yamidat HaChesed. V'zei Yamidat HaOlam, Shich HaShpa'ot V'Chasadim L'Kol Be'Olam, V'li Shum Gvul. Now we're hearing clearly about Avraham the Universalist. Avraham was somebody who was a man full of chesed, a man who reaches out all over, is overflowing with love, and there are absolutely no limitations whatsoever. The whole time before he does Brit Milah, hayalo eza hishtatfut im b'nei doro, he had something in common with the other people of the generation. He was able to reach out to them and to feed them and have something to do with them and bring them tachet kanfei ashchina. He goes on to a different spiritual level. Now he's on a higher level than them. And they would have been afraid to come near him. Now, there's more interesting things to read here, which we won't. I question whether this is right. I question whether this is right because I think it goes absolutely against what it says in the Chumash. Let's hold on to that for a moment. But what I will agree with one thing. I'll agree that I think this is part of what scared Avram. But before we read where I think we can see clearly that it scared him, let's look, you wanted to get back to the Erev Tafshilin, let's look at Source 22. This is the Meshech Chochma, Meir Simcha from Dvinsk, commenting on the pasuk about Yaakov Avinu vayichan et ha'ir. So he says it's interesting. Yaakov keeps Shabbat, and what does Yaakov do? He puts up tchumim. Avraham apparently keeps Shabbat and keeps the mitzvot, but what does Avraham do? He does Erev Tafshilin. So look what it says, where it's underlined. Ulechein Avraham chipes That's what we saw beforehand. Avram wanted to reach out and to spread out and to teach and to impact all kinds of people, even if he's a Yishmael, is a son of his, that he can impact, he will impact others because he knows Ishmael will not be Jewish. This is the 2,000 years of Torah. The Gama Yav Dizek B'Kavanah Shalachim B'Tzrayim Akom Chochma B'Chartumim L'Papel L'Karvam L'Shitato B'Achadut U'V'Torah. That's an unbelievable statement. One of the problems in this week's Parsha is that God says to Avram, pick up from your house and so on, go to Israel. He's in Israel 15 minutes, doesn't work out. Pilot trip didn't work. He's in Egypt. What's he doing in Egypt? According to the Ramban, he's punished for going to Egypt. He never should have gone to Egypt. You hear what the Meshech Chochma said? Why did he go to Egypt? Because Egypt was considered at that point to be the most sophisticated civilization, and he said, I have to try to impact them. Because if I can impact them, I can change the whole world. It didn't work out. But that's why it says he goes there. Which means Avraham's Midah is one of stretching out what you didn't get over here. This grand. What you may not have understood by what he's saying. It won't be clear till you read the contrast, which is the other side. Lo kein Yaakov ra'asha mitato shlema uvizaro dai shayu ma'onu mirkava l'shchina k'mo shetichu ra'asha Hashem nitzav alav ra'a lahafuch ki banav yu nifradim me'amim acherim mugbalim b'tchum. And just, I'm going to skip to it. Because Yaakov sees something else. He sees that his children are complete. He sees he no longer needs the interaction with the others. And therefore he sets up boundaries. Read the last line, Zemer Litzatam, and that's what the rabbis meant when they said, She'avram kiyem erev tafshilin, lahachnis orchim ulakabel gerim tachat kanfei shchina. Just in case you don't know, he didn't tell us one thing here. Why do you have erev tafshilin? Why do you just cook everything beforehand? So the Gemara says, because guests may come unexpectedly. Who does that fit? That's Avraham. When it says that Avram keeps Erev Tafshilin, why? Because Avram's the kind of person that unexpected guests will be sitting at his table. That's what the Meshech Chochma tells us this really means. Meshech Chochma is not for a second telling us that Avram kept the whole Torah. He's saying, hold it. Pay attention. We saw a Gemara that said that Avram kept Erev Tavshilin. We saw a Gemara that said, a Midrash that says Yaakov put up Tchumin. He says, no, it doesn't mean that they kept the whole Torah, even this. That's not what it means. It means that Avraham's Midah, Avraham's Chesed, is such that Avraham will always be having more and more guests coming into his home, and therefore Avraham's going to be the type of person who the idea, the spiritual idea behind Erev Tavshilin, where more guests may show up for Shabbat, and therefore when are you going to cook, because Erev Yom Tov is Shabbat. Not that he kept Yom Tov, and not that he kept Shabbat, but Avraham's Midah was one of Hitpashtut, of spreading out more and more. Yaakov's Midah, though, is one of setting up boundaries. They get to Shechem, they need to set up boundaries. They can't have a situation of intermarriage, they can't have a situation of too much interaction. So over here, what he's saying is that different generations necessitate different types of gestures by the community. Abraham is spreading out, Yaakov, on the other hand, is setting up limitations. Understanding... Correct. Leave that for a moment. Because Avram's eventual understanding is that Ishmael is not going to be the future for him. It's not going to be. It's not the progeny that God had spoken about.
Did he say he's reaching out? Is he reaching out to Ishmael?
Yes, 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 yes.
And to Egypt, but it doesn't work.
Right, right. He reaches out all over. Yes. It says even.
Even.
I know. Don't tell me. Don't tell me. I know. I know that's what you're going to ask. I know. Go tell the Meshech Chachma then. The Meshech Chachma is saying, no. He's saying, excuse me, that's not what it really means. Meaning, the Meshech Chachma is following all of these lines of saying that it's the spiritual level of it, but the specific pointing at Erev Tavshilin is for a reason. And because that really relates much more to Avraham. Why doesn't Avram do Brit Milah before God tells him to? Well, the Beit HaLevi points out in 23 is that Brit Milah is going to be something which will hurt his ability to reach out to other people. It's going to make boundaries. It is going to make Jews different from others. Brit Milah is something which frightens Avraham because he doesn't know how he can go about doing this. In fact, if you look at the Midrash in source 24, we find something which is very strange. When Avraham, and again, I'm going to frame it in the same way that the Alshich does in source 26, and then we'll go back and look at Midrash. The Alshich notices something. There are various Midrashim that tell us that when God tells Avraham to do a Brit Milah, he pauses and he starts to negotiate with God. On the other hand, we all know that when God tells him to do the Akedah, silence, and he marches ahead and does it. In source 26, the Alshech writes, "Bnei roi lahair ma ra'a al kacha Avraham l'ton negin mamroyit barach." What did Avram see to go against God's instruction? Mishlo patsa et piv ba'amor elav kach na'advincha gichitcha. The same person doesn't open up his mouth when it comes to Akedah. Over here, when it comes to Brit Milah, over here, Avraham absolutely flinches. He hesitates. Source 24. It starts out, I'm reading the last line of Midrash Rabbah Mem Vav Bet. God tells him to go and do Brit Milah, and what's his answer? Amar in Kaviva hi Amilah. If you like Brit Milah so much, why don't you ask Adam to do it? What's that question mean? Why isn't it universal? Why are you making me different? Amalo Kadosh Baruch Hu, God said to him, La'avram, Daicha aniva atava olam. Forget about everyone else, just me and you. What do you need anyone else for? V'im'ein at makabel lechalimol, daila olami. And he goes, and if you're not going to do it, then it's just, my world's enough, I don't need you either. And God is very harsh on this. This is what you have to do. Daila lami adkan, v'dayla orla adkan, v'dayla mi ashtei aguma. I'm not going to explain all this. Adkan amar adshlo malfi hayu ba'im umizdav gimli. He says, but till I did Rila, people would come and visit me. So mashe malfi hayu ba'im umizdav gimli. Amalok kadosh baruch hu.
Avram, Decha Shani Elokecha, Decha Shani Patrancha. And he goes on to say, I'll come and visit you. Which is actually very interesting now when you go back to right after the Brit Milah, you have the angels coming and visit him. Avram's hesitation over years, people aren't going to want to see me anymore. People will see me as being different. People will see me as being a Jew. And that's going to ruin it. How can I have an impact on everybody? And what's, I think, particularly interesting about this, and here you really get to the tension. Exactly, exactly. But it's more than that. It's further than that. Because now you understand why the Brit Milah is a test when you read the Psukim. Look at source 34. V'yi Avram ben tishim shana v'teisha shanim v'yirah Hashem el Avram v'yoma elav ani kel shakai v'telech lefanai v'yet tamim. What does kel shakai mean? First of all, what is kel shakai? What is the name shakai? The name shakai, the Gemara says, ani ze shamarti le'olam dai. Shakai, the name shakai is one about creating gvulot. There is this image of the world being created and spreading and spreading and spreading out. Shakai means sha'amar le'olam dai. Said to the world, stop. Rashi hints at this. Keep like one hand on source 34, but turn for a second to 45. Here we have the Rashi. Ani kel shakai, ani hu sheyesh dai be'elukuto l'kol beria, l'picha kitalech l'panai, yelecha le'oloka, u'lepatron, וכן כל מקום שבמקרא פירושו כך די שלו והכל לפי העניין. The word שדי always means limitations, גבולות, stopping. So on the one hand, God introduces a new name that Avram has never heard before. What's the new name? Shakai. Die. Limits. Gvulot. Let's continue in the source, in 34. Ani kel shakai, v'talech lefanai v'yetamim. Be in front of me and be, what does it mean to be tamim? Tamim means it can be both innocent and it can be shalem, perfect. V'tnei briti, and here the word brit comes in, or we'll make a covenant. We don't know yet what the word brit means here. V'ni v'necha v'arbeh otcha v'ma'od ma'od. V'yipol avram p'na v'yidaber ito alakim le'mar ani hinei briti itach v'yite la'av hamon goyim. I'm going to make my covenant with you and what we now become. Av Hamon Goyim, what does that mean? What's Av Hamon Goyim? All nations. You're going to be universal. Av Hamon Goyim. The Lo Yikra Oda Chimcha Avram, which Rashi tells us is the connotation of only from Aram, but now you're Av Hamon Goyim. Yev Shecha Avraham Ki Av Hamon Goyim Natatecha. That's what Avram means. Now you're becoming universal. And it goes on. And then it says, Pasuk Yud Zot Briti Asher Tishmeru. What is it? Imo Lachem Kol Zachar. Unimaltim B'sar Erlatchem. V'yela Od Brit Bini Uvenecha. I'm going to make a covenant with you. You're going to have circumcision, which, as far as Avram is concerned, this is horrific. Because this is going to create boundaries, this is going to create borders. But what does God tell him at the exact same time? And now you can be an Av Hamon Goyim. How does this work both ways? This is the tension. This, by the way, I think this is a paradox. And I think that this paradox is not the same level of paradox as the Akedah. You're going to kill Yitzchak, but Yitzchak will be your descendant. How can it be both ways? There's a paradox built into the test. I think there's a paradox built into this text, and I think there's a paradox built into Lech Lecha as well. You're going to affect all the world, okay, but leave all these people and now come to the land of Israel on your own spiritual journey, come to this holy place. How can this be both ways? And Avraham hesitates. Avraham does not see how this can work. This is what Avraham goes back to God and says, like, what are you talking about? If I'm supposed to impact other people, Brit Milah is not the way to do it. This will set up gvulot. This will set up boundaries and borders. God at the same time is telling him that you will be universal, lehit pashet, and at the same time he's telling him, set up boundaries, limitation. The idea of the Brit Milah is the idea of a limitation, The idea of the Brit Milah is Kedusha in terms of sexual relations. The idea of Brit Milah is the ability of man to control his nature, which is why the name Shaddai, which is the implication of nature flowing and flowing unchecked and uncontrolled. The idea of Brit Milah is that no, nature can be controlled. Man's nature can be checked. There can be Gvulot. And therefore the name Shaddai is always going to be related to this idea of self-control and Brit Milah. And Avram is being told over here contradictory things, at least I'm not even sure if contradictory is the right word, a paradoxical message is coming to Avraham. This is the tension. This spreading out to impact all those around him, on the one hand, versus now being told to erect borders, to make gvulot, to make yourself different, to mutilate yourself, and to do something that people just won't understand. How can he now stand in front of others and have the same rapport and the same, bless you, and the same kind of impact upon others when God is forcing him to do something which Avraham understands that the people will think is grotesque? And therefore, even though Avraham keeps the mitzvah and keeps the Torah and does all kinds of things, when it comes to Brit Milah, that's what we just now learned. Adkan. This is not something. Erev Tavshilin, that's something Avram can keep. Erev Tavshilin, to have more guests, in order to be able to cook more, that's something that Avram relates to. But in order to do something which will create Gvulot, that's something which Avram hesitates about, and that's something which is very different. By the way, now you realize how interesting it is that the Bnei Yaakov turn around to the Bnei Shechem and say, yeah, do a Brit Milah. No, I'm saying, if you understand it on that level as well, is that they are saying, no, we need limits, we need gvulot, we need to correct, to make borders over here. And it's not what they think. Yeah.
Why are they trying to do that? Why do you have to say, oh, why is the national thinking, why is the rest of the world, no, let's get it done. But you say, you know, that makes you emotional.
What God is really saying over here to Avraham is that you need Kedusha. That's what he's saying to him. You need Kedusha. Now the question is, for what purpose? If we understand this, and we don't yet, I think it interrelates with the Akedah as well. Let's take a look. We get to the Akedah, source 41. Vayihi achar hadvrim ha'ela, ve'lokim nisa et Avraham, v'yomer lav Avraham, v'yomer hineni, v'yomer kachna et bincha yechidcha, and so on and so forth. Take your son. Pasagim v'yishken Avraham b'boker, v'yechavosh et chamaro, v'yikach et shnei na'arav yito, v'yitzchak b'no. And they set off on the journey. This is parallel to Lech Lecha. Go off, he doesn't know exactly where he's going to. You go, you'll see it, I'll show you, you'll understand. He goes. Who does he go with? He goes to Yitzchak, but he takes two others. Who are the two others? According to Rashi and Midrash, it's Yishmael and Eliezer. He takes with him. V'yomash lishi v'yisav armet eina v'yaret ha'makom mirachok v'yom avram el na'arav shivu lachem po ima chamor v'aniva nar nyalcha adko v'nishtachave v'nashuva aleichem. Avram says to the na'arav, you guys stay here with the donkey, and we will go up to the mountain. We will bow down to God, and then we will come back to you. Now, you can start to tell me now, but it's not really true. It's not what Avram intends. He lies to them and so on. Leave all that aside. Rashi over here, picking up from the Midrash, has a very interesting insight as far as the background of the conversation. Why take them if he's not going to take them? Why take them part way, not all the way? What was the purpose of their being there? Rashi over here tells us that they look up into the mountain, and Avram sees this unbelievable cloud, which he's not sure if it's real or if it's surreal. He doesn't know if it's physical, doesn't know if it's spiritual, and he sees this unbelievable cloud on top of the mountain, which looks like the Shekhinah, and he turns around and he says to Yishmael, what do you see? He says, I see a mountain. He turns around to Eliezer, what do you see? I see a mountain. He turns around to Yitzchak, he says, what do you see? He says, I see an unbelievable cloud on top of the mountain. So he turns to them, he says, Shavupo machamor. You stay here with the donkey. And the word chamor obviously means chomer, means the physical. You people who don't see the spiritual, stay over here with the physical, and Niva Hanar, and I and the boy, will go up, v'nishtachaveh v'nashuv aleichem. Rav Soloveitchik pointed out under numerous occasions that people often forget the last part of the verse, the Neshuva Aleichem. he says that there's no question over here that Avram has absolute clarity that his real son, you know, this particular Jewish experience is with him and Yitzchak. It's not with Eliezer, it's not with Yishmael. They're involved in the world which is Chumri. They're involved in the physical world. They stay below. And Avraham, it's interesting, takes them along for the ride. He takes them along, and at some point they separate. Which point do they separate? Those who see the spiritual can continue. Those who can't, don't see the spiritual have to stay behind. But what does Avraham say to them? Avraham says that me and the boy will go up and we will serve God. We're going to go to the top of the mountain. We're going to meet the Shekhinah. We're going to have a religious experience. But what does he say at the end? V'nashuvu aleichem. But we're going to come back to you. So if Soloveitchik pointed out that is the Jewish responsibility in the world. The Jewish responsibility is to climb the mountain, to serve God, but to go back for the rest. Which means the way to accomplish the spiritual, the way to accomplish our universal task, is by first becoming as holy as we can possibly become. It's not that by becoming holy, we therefore separate ourselves from the rest of the world. It's that by becoming holy, we enable ourselves to deal with the rest of the world. And what Avraham does over here, he realizes the other two don't see it. We can't go any further. We have to stop here. And I just want to point out something which I consider to be significant. Whatever happened to the Nefesh HaShasu B'Choran? All gone. The people that Avraham impacted before there was Kedusha in his life, none of them stayed. All these people are gone. The Midrash says it very clearly that the Nefesh HaShasu B'Choran disappeared. If you want to see the Meshech Chachma quotes it in Source 40, they ended up going back. They went back to their old ways. It did not stick. It did not stay. Avraham spends the first part of his career, again, going from the age of 75 to the age of 99, impacting all kinds of people, and he's afraid to do the Brit Milah. And what does Hashem tell him? He says, no, do the Brit Milah, and now you can be an Avhamon Goyim. See, when I said before that I felt that one of the sources over here was incorrect, because it says that once Avram does this, he changes completely, and once he changes completely, he can no longer impact the world at large. The reason why I don't think that that's correct is because of a very simple point. It tells us that Avraham, at some point... I don't remember what number that was. It was in Source 21. The Brit Milah, Ferit Shlomo tells us, the Brit Milah will cause him to separate completely from others. Avraham himself says it in the Midrash, in Source 25. Amar Avraham ad shalom mileti hayu ha'ovrim v'shevim ba'im etzli. Tomar misha mileti eini ba'im etzli. He says that they're not going to come to me anymore. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu ad shalom mileti hayu b'nei adam ba'im etzlecha. I'll come and I'll hang out. But now God says something interesting. Now the Shekhinah will be in your tent. Now the tent will be full with the Shekhinah. Beforehand, there is an absence of Kedusha, which means if you say, what's the necessity of the Brit Milah? It's not the Brit Milah. The Brit Milah is not the issue. What is the issue? The issue is having a home which is full of Kedusha. And believe me, a home full of Kedusha can happen with a Brit Milah, it can happen with Shabbos candles, it can happen on all kinds of ways, but that's the issue over here, is creating a home with Kedusha, because that's eventually what's going to be able to really to impact upon others. In fact, when you think about the prototypical Avraham experience of reaching out to others, where do you see it? Where does the Torah tell us that Avraham actually did something to reach out to others? When? By the Eshel. When does that take place? The Eshel takes place later. Let's take a look at the Pasuk. In Source 36. Avraham now has done the Brit Milah. Source 36, Vayichritu Brit Bever Shava, Vayikam Avimelech. Avraham makes a covenant with the other people around. Now he's different. It's interesting. Now he's Avraham HaEvri, which he's not called beforehand. Vayita Esho Bever Shava, Vayikra Sham B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam. Avraham plants Eshel. What is Eshel? Eshel, there are different opinions in the Midrash. Rashi writes, Eshel Rav Shmuel, Chadamar Pardes, Lavim Imenu Perot La'orchim Besuda, V'chadamar Pundach La'achsanya, Uvokumine Perot. That according, and then V'yikra V'shem Hashem, That the Gemara tells us that the Midrash tells us, and that's what Rashi's quoting, is that Avraham used the Eshel in order to create Dusha to spread about. What he would do is that either it means that he planted a pardes orchards in order to have fruit to give to people, or it meant literally that Avram had a tent that was open on all sides, as we know, and people would come into the tent, he would give them food, and they would say, Avram, thank you, and he would say, don't thank me, thank God. All of this takes place, not as in Tiferet Shlomo told us, that after the Brit Milah, where Avram has totally changed spiritually, now he no longer can impact other people. This, we're told by Rashi, this we're told by Midrash, takes place after Avram has the Brit Milah. Now Avram opens up his tent by the desert. Be'er Sheva is opening up, facing the desert. People traveling in from Egypt, where perhaps now we understand, based on what we saw before for the Meshech Chachma, people who have been impacted by Egyptian society, the sophisticated society, they come back from there, and Avram is waiting for them. And Avram has his tent opened up, and Avram says, make a bracha. That's what Rashi is saying over here, that Avram, on the one hand, was afraid of doing things that would make him different, because Avram so much wanted to be able to change the world and impact others. And Avram was afraid that if he does a Brit Milah, it will hurt him. And it's interesting, there are sources that we skipped today, believe it or not, and one says that Avram was more concerned with universal concerns than with personal concerns, which is why when it came to the Brit Milah, that he said, no, I can't do, but when it came to, okay, fine, I'll do it. But Avram is somebody who deep in his heart cared about every person in the world, and that is the tension that we see. All the way from the beginning, when we're introduced to Avraham, all the way to the end. When Avraham comes to learn, and as I said, this is part of the message of Brit Milah, and this is part of the message of the Akedah as well, what he comes to learn is that in order to really impact others, it doesn't mean that you go down and you be just like them on their level. Really, to be able to impact others, what Avraham learns is that he needs to have more Kedusha. And once he has more Kedusha, then he can really impact other people on a real level. And that becomes the message of the Akedah. That he comes up to the mountain, but he says to them, I'm going to serve God, but then I'm coming back to you. And ultimately, that has to be part of the Jewish experience. That we, to a very strong extent, separate from the rest of the world, and we do things and they think that we're all crazy. But it's not that we're not concerned about the rest of the world. It's not that we've ignored the rest of the world and said, as far as we're concerned, they can all go to hell, and all that we care about ourselves. And there are Jews that feel that way, and that is mistaken. The message of Avraham is universal concerns and particular concerns. How do you do the both? You need to, on a particular level, get to the highest level that you can. And at that point now, you can start to take upon yourself the universal concerns. This is true in terms of the individual, and this is true in terms of the society. And if we're Jews as a society, it's not that we're not concerned what goes on in other places. We have to be concerned. The question is how and where we have the ability of impacting upon others. What I mentioned as being a paradox or a contradiction is not a contradiction at all. Both of the things go together, and this is what's deep in Avraham's neshama. Avraham is full of chesed. These gvulot frightened him. The limitations frightened him. But God teaches him that ultimately what the gvulot are about is the concept of kedusha. And the world needs more kedusha. And if the world has more kedusha, then we can begin to accomplish our universal mission. There is a source that says that. Okay.